Hello and welcome. You're basically doing the right thing every time you decide to stream another episode of Mack Watson Talks. On this episode, indicted. A grand jury indicts 11, let's just call them big liars, who said Donald Trump won the election in Arizona in 2020. Yeah, they're in trouble. Also, a kid gets an octopus as a pet, and I didn't know octopus could have up to 50 babies at one time. We'll talk about that. Also, Phoenix Sky Harbor Airport may get a new terminal. That's in the plans. Why are they calling it West Terminal? Why don't they just call it like Terminal 1 or Terminal 5 or I don't know. Anyway, that and much more is coming up, so let's get started. This is episode 270. That'd be 270. All right, Cricket, you ready? Big news. Big news.
Okay, what's that?
Okay, so do you remember the election of 2020, right?
How could I forget?
I know. Not many of us could. There are people who have been charged now. This just happened this week. An indictment of people in Arizona, the fake electors, have been charged with state crimes in Arizona. And guess who they were? Guess who they worked for?
The Republicans?
Donald Trump. A state grand jury in Arizona this week indicted so-called fake electors who backed then-President Donald Trump in 2020, as well as key Trump aides, after a sprawling investigation into the alleged efforts to overturn Joe Biden's win in the presidential election in the state.
Wait, they went to like... They were like in the Elector College? Is that what you're saying? And they were faking it? How do you fake your way into that?
Don't know. I don't know how you fake votes, I guess. I don't know. But here's what happened. So 1 month after the 2020 election, 11 Trump supporters convened at the Arizona GOP headquarters in Phoenix, and they signed a certificate claiming to be Arizona's 11 electors to the Electoral College.
Wait, the Electoral College has actual people? I thought those were just like votes.
Well, it is, but then you have to have somebody that says, I represent so-and-so and so-and-so.
Oh.
Okay.
I thought the like state's attorney general just was like, here's where our electors are going.
No. Biden.
Oh, wow. You learn something new every day.
Even though Biden won the state by over 10,000 votes and state officials certified his electors, the state Republican Party documented the signing of the certificate in a social media post and then sent it to Congress and the National Archives. Among those charged is a horrible human being named Kelly Ward. Do you remember her?
Yes.
She's the one that badmouthed John McCain and basically told him he needed to step down when he was diagnosed with cancer.
How did they think they were going to get away with this?
I don't know, man. How does any criminal think they can get away with stuff? I don't know. So Kelly Ward served as chair of the Arizona GOP during the 2020 election and the immediate aftermath. So on January 6th, 2021, that was the insurrection, she tweeted about the attack, or after the attack on the U.S. Capitol, Congress is adjourned, send the elector choice back to the legislatures. Ward was a consistent propagator of false claims that Arizona election results were rigged.
So what happened then? Did the Democrats also get together, sign their 11 electors and send that? And then the feds were like, wait, what?
Yeah. Yeah, kind of, sort of. Others charged were state legislators Anthony Kern, Jake Hoffman, Michael Ward, Kelly Ward's husband, Tyler Bauer, the Republican National Committee's Arizona committeeman, and the chief operating officer of the Trump-aligned Turning Point USA, Greg Safston, the former Arizona GOP executive director, former U.S. Senate candidate Jim Lehman, Robert Montgomery, the former head of the Cochise County GOP, and Republican Party activist Samuel Moorhead, Nancy Cottle, and Lorraine Pellegrino. She makes a fine sparkling water. All right, so Trump is described as the unindicted co-conspirator one in the indictment. The document includes redacted names of other people who have been charged in the case, but they have not yet been served. Two of them appear to be former Trump Chief of Staff Mark Meadows and former Trump campaign and White House official Mike Roman. Another passage appears to describe attorney Kenneth Chesbro, one of the planners of the alleged scheme, as an unindicted co-conspirator. Chesbro pleaded guilty last year in Georgia to conspiracy charges, brought against him, Trump and 17 other people in the state as well.
So they're not seeking to indict those people, or they're...
redacted, so they haven't been charged yet.
So because it would be pointless to try to indict them and then try
Or they don't have enough evidence
to extradite them and do whatever they'd have to do to get them right.
Maybe, I don't know.
Or they don't even have, the state doesn't even have jurisdiction over them because they were never actually in Arizona.
That could be too.
Committing their crime, so that would be a federal crime and not a state crime, right?
That could be too. Arizona was one of seven states where alternate electors signed paperwork falsely claiming Trump had won the states. So, you know, you had Nevada, Georgia, Michigan, and Arizona.
They were the alternate electors. Like, they were the ones that would have been the electors if Trump had won. But they didn't, but they signed their paperwork anyways.
Right. Trump lost Arizona.
Proceed as if we won.
Pretty much. Trump lost Arizona by just under 11,000 votes as the Republican electors sent illegitimate certifications to D.C. Trump sought to put pressure on Maricopa County officials as well as other Arizona Republicans, including the then, I remember this, the then state House Speaker Rusty Bowers and then Governor Doug Ducey. So if you remember, Trump placed a call directly to Governor Ducey as he certified the state's election results. It says Ducey muted the call. I don't know what that means. I don't know if he didn't take the call or what happened.
Well, so what happens? Does the Secretary of State / Governor certify the election results and then the parties, whichever one, if it's the Republicans or the Democrats with their alternates or whatever, then sign their little things and send them off to Washington? Is that how the Electoral College works?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
So somebody actually certified it, like the Secretary of State or Governor or whatever, and then...
I don't know if they certified it, though. They tried, but they never accepted it. No,
they certified it within the state, and then the electors have to certify it to the feds, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, but somebody in the state already said, look, this is who won. So it wasn't like the Republicans were mistaken. It had already been signed it was Biden, and they were like, yeah, screw that. We're still going to send in our electors. Right. Okay.
Yeah. So Attorney General Chris Mays, a Democrat, announced the indictment this week. It alleges the slate of Republicans, sometimes known as fake electors, engaged in a conspiracy aiming to prevent the lawful transfer of the presidency of the United States, keeping President Donald J. Trump in office against the will of Arizona voters and depriving Arizona voters of their right to vote and have their votes counted. Now, as far as...
It was a failed conspiracy. Whatever.
So the grand jury has charged these people, right?
The grand jury,
So what does that mean? So a bunch of people get together as a grand jury. What is that?
So there's a different ways for you to be charged with a crime. You can be charged with a crime by like a police officer writing out a warrant, right?
Okay,
then like handing it to you because they witnessed you committing a crime, like speeding or whatever.
Right.
They can also, based on like information from the police, file a charging document and then you have an initial appearance.
Okay.
And that sometimes happens, particularly in misdemeanor sort of cases where you have an initial appearance and then whatever. But in bigger crimes, particularly those where there was not an immediate witness to what happened, but they've gathered evidence.
Yeah.
They don't. Now, it's different in different states. In the state of Wyoming, you'll never hear of a state grand jury being convened. That never happens.
Because it's not allowed?
They just don't do it. I mean, it's possible. The mechanics for it
are there.
So
it's not illegal.
But that's not what they do. In the state of Wyoming, county attorneys or district attorneys, which district attorneys only exist in big counties. Otherwise, you have county attorneys that are acting as the state's attorneys. They just file the charges with usually here it's called the circuit court, and the circuit court does a, you know, in your initial appearance, and if they determine that there's enough evidence to have it bound over to district court, because it always happens with felonies, right, then that's what they do. But in Arizona, lots of crimes, particularly those that are really big, they take before a grand jury first. And the reason why is because then it's not one prosecutor, this is overgeneralizing, one prosecutor and one judge saying, yep, I think this is enough. Let's go move forward to Superior Court. It's actually a jury that's looking at the evidence and says, yeah, I think based on this evidence. Now, the defense doesn't get to present any evidence because the defense isn't even
So the grand
present.
Jury just says whether you can proceed or not. Is there enough evidence
charges,
to proceed?
With the charges.
Okay, and so once they
it's
say
not,
yes.
It's not like beyond a reasonable doubt.
Right,
it's just, is there enough evidence here that it appears that these charges could move forward? They're not, you know.
But the indictment comes down, mm-hmm. so there will still be a trial. The grand jury mm-hmm. does not decide whether you're guilty or innocent.
No, because the defense didn't get to be a part of that.
Right.
Those proceedings.
Okay.
The defense is never a part of those proceedings.
Okay. So again, you have 11 GOP electors meeting at the Arizona Republican headquarters in Phoenix in December of 2020, posting videos on social media of themselves casting their votes for Trump. And they signed their paperwork and to submit it to Congress, claiming they were duly elected and qualified electors.
Right.
That was a lie. That was not true.
Right. And the paper itself that they signed and submitted is
evidence, is, right?
Is like the, it's like not just like he said, she said.
Okay.
Or are we misinterpreting?
It's an official document,
this
right?
person said that they met, but did they really meet?
Right.
They've signed that document. No matter how they met and did it or whatever, they put their names to that piece of paper and sent it to the federal government.
Right.
When they had no right to. They were not the electors right. because once the election was certified by the state,
yeah.
the Democrat electors were the electors that were to mm-hmm. submit to the Electoral College, not the Republican ones.
So the same day, the electors for Biden met and cast their votes in the Electoral College.
Not for Biden, for the Democrats, probably.
Yeah, yeah. The same day, electors for Biden.
Electors the for Democrats, the Democratic, yes.
Yeah, met and cast their votes
for
confirming
Biden.
the Democrat win.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So they met at an undisclosed location citing security concerns tied to Trump's refusal to accept his loss.
Well, it was a procedural.
Yeah. right. It was a procedural process that prior to 2020 was a formality often overlooked by most Americans. So the investigation began under a new attorney general in 2023, and now we have the culmination
of that investigation. Overlooked. I mean, I'm sitting here thinking, like, I guess I thought the electors were the electors. Okay, so even if I believed that there were 11 people that were going to sign off and send it in, I didn't think it had anything to do with political parties.
Yeah, right.
I just assumed it was like 11 neutral people.
No.
like, mm-mm. right? No, it's like they're just on standby from each of the parties to
right.
be able to, and also if there's an alternative, like an independent or the Green Party or whatever, that would also be
yeah.
on standby in case their guy won.
And what's also interesting is that two Arizona current congressmen were among the loudest voices in support of this, the Stop the Steal campaign. Andy Biggs and Paul Gosar, he's a boob, received subpoenas in this investigation.
But they didn't sign the paperwork.
No, they did not.
But they may have been a part of, yeah, let's just go forward with
yep.
it.
Yep.
You should totally submit that because this is how we're going to take a stand. And you know what? I mean, maybe saying those words, it didn't really make you a conspirator, but you certainly were inciting it. You certainly were lending your position
yeah, right, right.
to the legitimacy of what these people were doing, and that will be part of their defense.
So sending the documents from Trump electors, quote, can prevent Biden from amassing 270 electoral votes on January 6th and force the members of Congress, the media, and the American people to focus on the substantive evidence of illegal election and counting activities in the six contested states.
The Electoral College, when they got one from the Republicans and one from the Democrats, were like, let's call the Secretary of State and see which
yeah.
one of these is legit.
I know.
And then the other ones that were submitted, maybe we should turn that over to the Attorney
right.
General's office in the state of Arizona.
But what they said was, no, we were just giving you a blueprint of what you could do. They wouldn't say that what they did was illegal, of course. They were just saying, oh, no, it's okay. We're just giving
Who
you a blueprint.
Who wasn't saying it was illegal? The Republicans?
Yeah.
Of course they
right,
weren't.
Right,
of course they weren't.
So that was one memo says, the memo was suggested that states that undertook the plan, quote unquote, the blueprint, should also spread messaging that presents this as a routine measure. So in other words, this is just normal. This is, it's gaslighting.
We do this all the time.
Right, exactly.
Every election, both of them submit
right.
it. And then let the federal government figure
right.
it out.
In fact, the
which
effort
is really, like, completely takes away from how the Electoral College
right.
is supposed to work.
And so it was,
if they were just supposed to figure it out themselves, couldn't they just, they would just wait for the Secretary of States from each of those states to tell them.
Right. So in fact, it was anything but routine. The grand jury said it was criminal. So that's what happened
right.
this week with the indictments coming down. I don't know what the punishment will be, though.
And,
I don't know
and,
what how
and,
much time you could
yet,
get if they're found guilty.
And yet, with all of this, Trump wants to run.
Trump is still running
yeah,
and
I mean,
is the
right.
presumptive nominee for the Republican Party.
It's so ridiculous.
Well, I mean, that's where we are. That's
except
where
for
we
some
are.
States are saying that they now won't put him on their ballot.
Well, that has gone through the courts too. Well, now, wait a minute. The Supreme Court has come down and said Colorado needs to put him on the ballot, and that affects, I think that affects every other lawsuit, I think, because the Supreme Court said it's not up to the states. This is a federal issue. It's not a state issue. So he's going to appear on all the ballots, I think, if I remember that correctly.
What if he's elected, if he's convicted of a felony before then?
See, I
couldn't a state say, you know what, even if it's a federal issue, like, we can clearly see that the federal law says you can't be convicted of a felony.
Right, but then the logistical part is, if they already have the ballots printed, then it's a time management thing. Can you get ballots redone or reprinted in time for the election? Most states say
and
no.
Can the Republican Party come up with a new nominee in time?
And that would be the other problem, too. So if he is indicted...
Why would the Republicans be stupid enough to make him their presumptive, or to make him their nominee, when there's all this potential like hanging out there that he's...
Because there's nobody else that is going to be able to win the general election if it ain't him. There is nobody else in the Republican Party right now that has the balls, that has the it factor to take on Joe Biden. That's the sad commentary. And the same for the Democrats.
And the fact is
why
means,
would the Democrats put Joe Biden on the thing? He shouldn't be president.
What it means is that Joe Biden's probably going to win the election again.
That's right. That's right. When he shouldn't, but the Democrats
well,
know.
He should if it's
no.
up against a felon.
Well, but again, do you want a man with dementia or do you want a felon?
A man with dementia.
Okay. The point is that the Democrats don't have anybody on their side that they can say, hey, Joe, step aside and we're going to put this guy
and
on.
And truly, Trump is starting to show signs of that as well.
I know.
So it's not really, oh, is this?
There's a whole bunch of wrong, a whole bunch of wrong going on. All right. Also in the news, in a vote of 32-28, the Arizona House has voted to repeal the state's abortion ban statute that went back to the Civil War. Three Republicans joined with all House Democrats in voting yes this week to repeal the ban. The motion now heads to the Senate. So the battle over abortion in Arizona reignited after the state Supreme Court decided to ban nearly all abortions on April 9th, reverting back to an 1864 penal code, I guess. Since then, there have been multiple rallies held in the valley as both sides have spoken out.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't understand. Like, again, from a legal standpoint, from a lawyer standpoint, how do you go and enforce something that is almost 200 years
old?
Well,
here's the thing that should have happened when they were enforcing other laws. They should have repealed the laws that were currently in existence.
True.
So if you are not sort of editing the law that's in existence,
yeah.
if you're like creating a new law, then any law that's contrary to it, the courts will consider it as basically replaced, right?
Yeah.
But if the law that replaced it is then repealed, then the law that was replaced, if it was never repealed itself, then it still stands. That's
right,
how
right,
it happens.
Right. Right.
That's but, how it happens.
Okay. It's just ridiculous that would still
now,
be in
whether
existence.
Or not the courts want to enforce that law is
yeah,
totally different.
Different.
And so what the legislature is doing is they don't want the courts to be able to enforce that law, so they're trying to repeal it so that they can't enforce it.
Right.
Because it's all theoretical at this point,
yeah,
whether the
yeah.
courts would enforce it or not.
Right. Okay, also in the news, something I will never experience because I'm never going back to Phoenix. Mayor
Whatever.
Kate Gallego outlined her vision for the city of Phoenix at her State of the City address this week. And one of the big talking points is a plan for a new terminal at Sky Harbor, which they would call Terminal, was it Terminal West or something like, hold on. It's the West Terminal. A new West Terminal would be built at Sky Harbor.
There's Terminal 2.
It would be another
Terminal. Terminal 4, Terminal West.
Right.
That's confusing. Why don't they just call it Terminal 5?
I don't know. This would be
Terminal 1, which doesn't exist anymore.
This would be Sky Harbor's first new terminal since Terminal 4 opened in 1990. And the city's aviation department pointed out that a 20-year plan was created in 2019. The plan is hundreds of pages showing the preferred plan, which would include the addition of what is called West Terminal.
So is it still part of like Terminal 4, but it's to the west of Terminal 4?
That's a great question. I haven't seen the plans. It will be a beautiful, it will be beautiful, says Kate Gallego, the mayor. It will be beautiful with net zero greenhouse gas emissions and equipped with a new customs facility that will help us welcome even more people from all over the world. Great. Okay.
So do they really need a new terminal? I mean, it doesn't seem like it's that.
Man, I don't know.
Since Terminal 3 opened, it seems like everything's pretty efficient there now.
So
Terminal 2 was like a nightmare, but now that's gone. Seems like it's really Terminal 3 is taking care of that, and that just seems like they're hopping right along.
So the spokesperson for the city's aviation department said,
it sounds to me like they're building a terminal where Terminal 2 used to be, because that would be the west part of the airport,
I was just, oh my God, it's like you're reading my mind. The spokesperson says that the west terminal would be near where Terminal 2 once stood.
Right.
So that terminal closed in early 2020 and was later demolished.
Right. And so, Terminal 1 is actually
so why
still exists, but they use it's a commercial terminal. Right.
No, wait a minute. Commercial? No, it's cargo, isn't it?
Commercial cargo.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. When you say commercial, I'm thinking commercial
not
planes.
Not passenger.
Right, not passenger.
Yeah, right.
So I don't know why they just don't call it, hey, the new Terminal 2. Why do you have to call it West? I don't get that.
They'll call it Terminal 1 since, I mean, maybe.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe on the inside they do call that other one still Terminal 1.
Right.
So just call it the new Terminal 2. Terminal West is really confusing because you're like, okay, 1, 2. Okay, so there's 2, 3, and then west. What?
Yeah, I don't get it either.
When you go into an airport, don't you expect to see things
numerically in order?
Or alphabetical, right?
Unless so I like go into a
terminal
hotel.
Terminal A, Terminal B, right, where they skip 13, right? So,
yeah,
okay,
exactly.
If we got to 13, I could see skipping 13.
Right.
But we're only at 5.
I know. I don't get it. I don't get it.
But, and we skipped 2, but not really. It's just because we destroyed it.
But I don't have to worry about it because I'm never flying back to Phoenix again.
Mm-hmm. You know what I think is funny is you're probably going to fly back there and fly into Terminal West.
You think so?
And then you're going to be like, why do they call it Terminal West?
Why do they call it Terminal
West?
I'm
like, you can't complain because you said you were never coming back.
Until somebody loses their job, I'm never flying back to that city.
Please.
All right. Let me ask you. This isn't in Phoenix. This is in Oklahoma, actually. But you used to have frogs, right?
Like live frogs.
Yeah, live frogs. Yes. You had chameleons. Did you ever have so many that it overwhelmed the house? Did they like procreate and you had like 50 frogs in your house at one time?
They never procreated, but at one time I had 3 frogs and 2 large lizards living in my dining room.
Okay, but they never got
out
of hand.
Which I didn't use as a dining room. No, they were not.
Okay. So this Oklahoma boy dreamed of owning an octopus since he was 2, and he finally got his dream to become a reality. The 9-year-old cried with joy when his parents gave him the tank that he would soon use to hold the new octopus. Well, they got the octopus, and in a couple of months later, they welcomed 50 new octopi. 50.
So it was like, it had been like hanging with that lady, had been hanging with the boy, like an octagirl, and came fully ready to lay some eggs, eh?
The uh-oh moment, mom said, is when the first one hatched, because they didn't know it was pregnant.
So they didn't even know to lay eggs? Don't they lay eggs? They don't give live birth,
do they? You know, that's a great question. I have no idea.
Oh, I'm looking it
up. Oh, I'm looking it up, too.
No, how? You keep reading, and I'm going to see if octopus...
Fat fingering it. I can't do it. All right, I'll just keep reading. All right, suddenly one octopus became 2, then 3, then 10, then 12. And the little boy, who's, like I said, 9 years old, watched as 50 in total became apparent in his, in the tank.
They lay the eggs.
Okay, they lay the eggs?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they don't do live births. Okay.
It says... Some octopus lay hundreds of thousands of eggs at a time, while others will only produce one egg at a time.
Okay. Each baby, though, each little egg has to be cared for in a separate container because the babies will actually cannibalize each other. Ew.
Wow.
So the little boy gave them names like Rocket Larry, Squid Cootie.
So
Swim Shady.
So they were like all laid all over the bottom of the tank.
I guess.
So what did they put them in, a bunch of like Dixie cups or something?
Yeah, yeah. Fiance.
So what did they do with them?
JC.
I don't even care what their names
are. All right. The family learned that octopuses make expensive pets. Leaks in the tank system required vacuuming carpets and relaying ruined floors. Dad says, I just wish my son's favorite animal had been a hamster. Oh, my God. So almost half of the baby octopus has survived. Usually the mom dies after laying her eggs.
I was going to say, the moms usually die. They only have one clutch, which is usually what eggs are called.
Yeah. And then the babies are destined for the educational institutions around the country.
So now their octopus is going to die, and the whole thing was a bust.
Yeah. So do octopus, look this up. Do octopus self-fertilize?
No.
Or no? Okay. No, so they do something together.
The male puts like a little pocket, like a little, he deposits like a little sack of sperm in her. It's not like penetration.
Right. Okay.
Reproduction. It's, well, sort of. I mean, he takes his little arm and sticks it in her, I guess.
I guess, yeah.
Yeah. So anyways.
Okay. We didn't need that last part, but okay.
You know.
Yeah. Okay. In other, are we done with the octopus story? Can we move on?
The whole thing was ill thought out by those.
Oh, you think so? Of course it was. Scientists have found a chapter of the Bible hidden for more than 1,500 years. It's the Book of Bill. Now, Bill is... No, I'm kidding. Researchers used ultraviolet photography to spot the text, which was hidden beneath multiple edits. So researchers say the manuscript is a gateway to understanding phrases and phases of the Bible's evolution. The old version of a Bible chapter that was hidden underneath a section for more than 1,500 years was discovered in Austria, the Austrian Academy of Sciences. They announced their discovery in New Testament Studies, a peer-reviewed academic journal published by Cambridge University Press. That would be amazing to find out if there was like a different... Well, isn't there like the Gospel According to Mary or Mary Magdalene or something like that? I mean, what if it's just a totally different chapter that we've never seen before?
Here's the thing about the Bible is it's not like the Bible's like, these are all the books and then we put them all together. What happened when they put the Bible together was there was like 100 books.
Yeah, there was 100 chapters or like, whatever, right?
Books.
Or books, right.
And they were like, nah, this one doesn't represent. Nah, this one. This one's a little bit too far off.
Let's take this one.
Yeah, like these people, these followers of, because.
Did every apostle write, except Judas, did every apostle write a gospel?
Let's just be clear here. Paul is the only person who wrote anything.
No, I thought it was Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John.
The rest of them were not necessarily literate.
Okay.
But they had followers, and their followers wrote down what they preached.
I see. Okay.
Okay. And so, I mean, Paul was like a shoo-in probably, right? I mean,
because he wrote all those epistles.
Although he did write things that were not included in the Bible.
Okay.
Because they felt they didn't lack authenticity, or they just were repetitive of other things that he had written.
He wrote advertisements for the Pharaoh Times, stuff like that.
Right, I mean, some of his stuff, he just was
the
like,
Jerusalem penny
pincher. I just wrote to the Colossians about this last week, and now I'm going to write to the Philippians about this. You know, like, I'm just going to copy and paste, because they're having the same problem.
Who the hell wrote Deuteronomy?
I don't know.
Can't we change that name? So, I always stumble over that one.
So they had all of these books, and they just chose, these are the ones we want to include and then call them our Bible.
Yeah.
But there were all these other books. It's not that they were, some of them after that, people stopped following them because they were like, well, if the Pope didn't accept them, then they're probably not the best version. So they sort of fell away. The monks were like, I don't want to copy these if they're not going to be a part of the Bible.
Yeah, I'm already stressed as it is.
They fell out of favor, right? But there was tons more writings that all were from different...
Isn't there one about Mary? Or didn't Mary write one?
Yes, the followers of Mary Magdalene and the church.
Mary Magdalene, not Mary... Oh, that's right, because she ascended into heaven. She wasn't around. Okay. So Mary Magdalene also supposedly has a Bible.
Right. But they chose not to include that one. Maybe it was the patriarchy. I don't know. But that was one that wasn't included.
Gotcha.
It doesn't mean it never existed.
Right.
But so that's the thing. That even the ones that they did accept, you have to think that probably wasn't the first time it was written down. It wasn't the first draft. And so as each succeeding generation had more and better educated scholars, they would try to correct the language, make it more... You know, whatever. Everybody has their own bias when they're working on it. And so that was kind of it was an evolution as it was going anyway. Because originally, all of those books were oral histories.
Yeah, right.
And then, you know,
then they were written down.
100 years, or, you know, 100 decades later, somebody wrote it down. And then it got translated. And every time it got translated, they were like, oh, it shouldn't say this word. It should say this word.
Right.
Like, this isn't a heretofore. This is actually a therefore, you know, or whatever, you know,
or,
right?
Or they even said, I've even heard the theory that Mary wasn't a virgin, they misrepresented the old translation from young girl and used the term virgin. And that's how we get Mary was a virgin.
The word virgin, if you take it back to its original context, Hebrew did not have to do with not having sexual relations.
Right, right. So again, I mean,
it had to do with an unattached young woman.
There you go. There you go. Which is how I met you. You were an unattached young woman.
Yes,
When we met. Okay. That is a lot of news this week. Thanks, Cricket.
Thank you, Mac. Are you a patron on Patreon? Are you getting free bonus material every month from Mac Watson Talks? You should become a member now. For as little as $5, you get a bonus episode every week. We talk about our marriage. We talk about our kids. Anything that has to do with the Watson household or what's going on with the Watsons, that's in the bonus material every month. Here's an example.
Reading. So they didn't read to her.
Reading was not something they did at home and not something that she wanted to do on her own. And
yeah.
We really struggled with that. We struggle with math, whereas those are two things he doesn't struggle with at all.
No. And the reason she struggled with math is because she didn't get, what are they called, known facts?
Your basics in math, which you get in kindergarten, first and second grade, are what ultimately become known facts when you're in third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and beyond.
Yeah.
And that is addition, subtraction, multiplication, division.
Right.
Like that you know what 8 plus 8 is without having to count on your fingers.
Right, right, right. Or you know what 2 times 2 is without that mean?
Or you know what 8 times 9 is without having to sing the 9 song or whatever.
Maybe for you. I still don't know what 8 times 9 is. But no, I'm kidding. You don't look at me that look. I'm kidding.
Well, 8 times 9, if you do it this way, is what? Do you know how this works?
No, I don't know how that works.
So you put the 8 down when you have all 10 fingers up, and then you come up with 72.
No.
Is that,
where did you learn that?
I don't know. I don't know.
Oh, I didn't know that.
My sister. She always has all these tricks, right? Yeah.
So. Okay. So he is turning 8 years old, and he's almost at the end. They're almost done with school this year, too. That is flooring me as well. They have about a month left of school, and then they're off for the summer.
Again? So that's 6 times 9 is 63.
Jeez.
Or not, I mean, no. 7 times 9 is 63.
Yeah, right, right.
6 times 9 is 54.
Jeez, that actually works. That's weird.
9 is 45.
Oh, so you can do it with various.
You can anything times 9.
Anything times 9, yeah, okay. Right. All right, that's amazing. So he also got an award or recognition this past week as well. From his teacher and from the principal.
It's called a preferral. So instead of a referral, which is when you're referred to the office because of behavioral or educational
you did something
problems,
wrong.
They call them preferrals, like you're being
preferred.
Or you're being referred before the referral. So it's a preferral, and it's a positive thing. So you're being referred for excelling, trying hard, whatever. And he's really come a long ways in writing and reading.
Yeah.
Want to hear the rest? Go to patreon.com/MacWatsonTalks. That's patreon.com/MacWatsonTalks. And for as little as $5 a month, you too can be a patron on Patreon. Now it's time for Tales from the Crib, where we tell you stories from the Watson household. We have a really sad story this week.
Is it sad or is it just inconvenient?
It's inconvenient. It's stress-inducing.
It's stress. I'll give you that.
You know what?
But
I don't think
it's sad.
I don't really get stressed by it, but your stress rubs off and makes me feel stressed. Otherwise, I would just be like, this is how I usually just take things as they come. But you just have gotten so obsessed over this problem that it's causing me stress.
Yeah. So we've had our cars for a number of years. One car is a 2012. The other car is a 2015. And we've had really good luck with
them.
They're
both Hondas.
They're both Hondas. We are a Honda family. And they've done very well for us. And my allegiance to Honda goes all the way back to when I was 17 and I bought my first Honda. And, well, you know what? It even goes back even further than that. My parents bought their first Honda in 1979. It was a 77 Accord station wagon.
Mm-hmm.
That thing was a tin can, man. It had no amenities whatsoever. It just had, space in the back seat and one speaker.
Nothing had amenities in the 70s. They all
were
tin
cans.
Oh,
they had electric windows and stuff.
Compared to how they didn't all have electric windows.
Well, Cadillacs did.
Compared to now, the cars back when we were kids were all tin cans.
They were death traps. Right. So we've been a Honda family for a very long time. And we had two Hondas, like I said, 2012, 2015. We never buy new. We are like Dave Ramsey says, we buy used.
Yeah, and they've been one owner used, not super used.
And they have been tremendous until 2 weeks ago.
No, that was, no, it's been more than that. It was a month ago.
A month ago?
The alternator went out on my car.
Oh, that's right. I forgot that one.
So it started with the alternator.
Oh, God.
And then two weeks after that.
Then you had problems with the struts.
And the
brakes.
And the brakes.
And the rotors.
And then.
Something called a control arm.
Right. And then, you know, it was time to have my oil changed. And then it was time to have your oil changed. And
they found something else.
And
when
then
they,
your window doesn't work.
Right. And they also found something that has to do with some kind of belt that I don't understand what
that
is.
And your brakes need to be fixed.
Yeah,
it's
they told
crazy.
Me the brakes. Yeah. So we've sunk thousands of dollars
but
into
I
the car.
But I told you the option, the alternative is we get new cars and then we start paying car payments.
Right, then
again.
We have car payments, which we don't want. So we take the chance that mm-hmm. we put money into the car. And, you know, Dave Ramsey says it all the time. You drive it into the ground and then, you, like when you become upside down in it, when it's not, you know, if you put $5,000 and it's only worth $3,000, that's when you get a new car. That's when you buy a used car and hopefully you don't have a car payment. But that has been very stressful because the quinceañera, our daughter's quinceañera, is coming up, and we've got to spend thousands of dollars on that as well. And so that's coming up in June. So we owe people money. We got to buy stuff, so on and so forth. So money is really, really tight. And you know what? I really didn't want this to happen, but that's the way life is. Oh, and I forgot medical debt. Yes, of course, fighting cancer is expensive as well. Damn mm-hmm. it. So it's just not convenient. It is not convenient to spend thousands of dollars on two cars.
I think
but
the
that's
hardest
where we
part
are.
For you is that 10 years ago, we never had any of this.
No, we didn't have a care in the world.
Well, we had a lot more cushion. We didn't have children.
That's right.
We just paid bills and had savings. And
right,
that's
exactly.
not true anymore.
That's right. We're living paycheck to paycheck, mm-hmm. and I'm fighting for every dollar I can get out of my job, you know, and, you know, it's just hard. It really is. And it's a lot of stress. It really is because I feel like every day we're going to lose everything.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't.
No. Because I think God will take care of it.
Right, right. And I always say God doesn't pay the bills and he doesn't pay our taxes.
That's because you don't have any faith.
That's right. That's right. Because it's all my fault, as usual.
No, faith is believing that you'll be taken care of. Fear is thinking that there's no way that you'll be taken care of.
Right, right. Or that we're all going to lose it. Yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah. So it's been very, very stressful. And then, of course, you know, your dad. He's had a lot of medical issues,
but
that kind of thing.
We don't have to pay for those. That's all.
No, I know. Yeah. I know that. But, I mean, still, it's stressful that we got to take him to doctors and watch him.
It is stressful when I'm, like, out of town or whatever
yeah. right.
those things are. Right.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, that's been a lot as well. So, we've been dealing with a lot of stuff this past month.
So, we've had some bad luck with cars lately.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is Tales from the Crib. Okay, now it's time for us to recognize the wonderful people, you, who are Patreon subscribers listening to the podcast, and we want to recognize you with a shout out.
Right. So actually, we've had quite a few new patrons lately.
Oh, that's good.
That have signed up as a free patron because you can listen to like 3 minutes of the bonus material before
okay.
it cuts it off.
I see. Okay.
It's just like a nice little thing that we do. You only get 3 minutes of it. If all you need is 3 minutes...
That's fine.
If you don't mind not hearing the end of the story, then that's
good
thing
fine.
For you. But it may be that as we see those free people that have just they just started allowing that in the last few months, they'll probably level up because they know.
Yeah.
They know.
They need to know.
Right. So let's start with our VIPs. These are people who support us at the $20 a month or more level. And they're our VIPs, right? So Aaron Mozzie, Christine Skroskoff, Corey Evans, Janet Thor, Carla Houghton. Oh, Houghton. You usually read these. Maybe that's why I'm having a hard time. Lily Calbura, Lisa, Melinda Bruski, Michael John, Roxanne Favors, Stacey Kagan, and Tommy Mueller.
So those are the $20 Patreon subscribers, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's go to the $10 subscribers. Who do we have?
All right, so at our $10 a month, those are all access patrons. We have Atzima, Aurora Feely, Cara Daughtry, Carly Garrett, Aaron Foley, Joan Pinson, Joe Subi, John Nystray, Karen Martin, Kathy Galen, Kathleen Longstaff, Kenya Stewart, Lynn Marzoni, Marshall Hadlock, Marsha Davis. How do those people get so close together? The cat, the cat,
yeah, I know.
And the Kathleen, and then the Marshall,
and the Marshall, and Marsha.
Right.
Yeah.
Mike Johns, Monique Lawrence, Sharon Miller, Shelley Wright, Stephanie Butler, Susan Lubin, and Timothy Durga.
Okay. Congratulations. Thank you.
We love you guys.
Yeah, that is awesome. So again, if you want to sign up, if you want to be a Patreon member, you, all you have to do is go to patreon.com/MacWatsonTalks. Sign up and you'll get insight into everything going on with the kids, with our marriage, with our recovery, with whatever. Whatever you want to hear. Whatever we talk about, it's a little more in depth, put it to you that way. We don't do news. We talk about ourselves, really.
It's kind of like Tales from the Crib, but like on steroids.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a therapy session, for both of us. So again, go to,
nobody wants to listen to that. Why would you say that?
Patreon.com/MacWatsonTalks. You hear the music, you know what that means. It is time for the last word. Well, in Winter Haven, Florida, it was a thief in the night, and Larry Carter Jr. can't believe he slept right through it all. "I ain't hear no horn, nothing. Car didn't crank, I would have heard it," he said. Carter said somebody took out the passenger window of his 2023 limited edition Dodge Charger SRT Hellcat Red Eye Jailbreak. I have no idea if that's an actual car or not. Never heard of it. He believes they rolled the car out of his neighborhood in Winter Haven, and then they started the engine. "It was special, you know. It got its last call. Got my mother's name, got Jesus on both sides," said Carter. "It was meant for her. That's the main reason I got that car, because of her, to represent her." A sign on the back windshield of the car says, "In loving memory of Lorena Leonard." That's Carter's late mother, who passed away in March 2019. Carter said he didn't take the car out very often, but when he did, his mother often came with him. He's even kept some of her ashes in the cup holder, and those ashes were also stolen. Ew. "She meant the world. She meant the world, actually, her and my dad, really. I felt like when I lost both of them, I felt like I wasn't nobody. I felt like I ain't got nobody and I ain't have nobody. They were in my corner," he said. Carter immediately called police and asked for some kind of linguistic... He called police. He called again the next day and found that his mother's ashes were hanging out of his mailbox. What? "Good thing they brought it back, because that car was special for her. So without her having ashes, I felt like I'm a failure." Carter said he worked to preserve the evidence. He said, "I took my shirt and I closed the lid, because I didn't want to put my fingerprints on it." Winter Haven police officers came to canvass the neighborhood and collect the new evidence. While Carter is still holding out hope he will get his custom car back, he is relieved to be reunited with his mother's ashes, what he calls a priceless possession. Until next time! Thanks for listening to this episode of Mac Watson Talks. This episode is copyrighted and may not be reproduced without permission. Connect with us on social media. And if you like what you hear, tell your friends. We love new listeners. Have a great week. And we'll talk to you next time on Mac Watson Talks.